To keep you guys too long. This is our fifth Christmas message of 2019, believe it or not, starting with one we did back in October, which was actually probably Christmas Day. So this one's going to be a pretty short one, 10 or 12 minutes. But I hope it touches home about what Christmas is and why we have Christmas morning and what happened on that morning. Corrie Ten Boom, who knows who Corrie Ten Boom is, anybody? Corrie Ten Boom was a Christian imprisoned in World War II. And she continued to write about Jesus and share Jesus and lead people to Jesus in the concentration camps. And she had a wise quote. She said, "Who can add to Christmas?" And she was right. What can we write and what can we say that has never been written and said before? What part of the Christmas story hasn't been heard 1,000 times? A man and a woman go to Bethlehem. The woman, a virgin, gives birth to God and lays him in a manger. She kisses his tiny lips, the lips that spoke her into existence. Shepherds visit sometime later. It's the wise men, the magi. And 33 years after that, that baby will give his life for everyone's sins. Everyone's. Caesar's and Stalin's and Hitler's and Capone's. And mine and yours. Is something missing? We've heard that so many times. We come to church, and I hope you guys come on Christmas Eve. There was nothing like Christmas Eve services at midnight. And John is actually doing the service Christmas Eve, so you guys could get a fresh and new perspective on things. So I'm going to fill in the rest of a couple of stories of things that we know very well, but we don't know the story behind the stories. And I will tie it all up, I hope, as to what Christmas is. The poet wrote, "Then from each black accursed mouth, the cannon thundered in the south. It was as if an earthquake rent the heartstones of a continent." That, believe it or not, is one of the stanzas in a very well-known Christmas song. It was during the Civil War between the North and the South. It was December 25th, 1863, and perhaps America's greatest poet, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, wrote those words. He was deeply depressed. His son lay in a hospital bed. A Confederate bullet had missed his son's spine by about that much, less than an inch, which would have paralyzed him for life. 2 years before this Christmas night, Longfellow's wife had died. Zach, can you bring up the first slide, please? 2 years before that night, his wife had died. She was sealing envelopes with candle wax, and her hair caught fire, and she caught fire, and he tried to put the fire out, and he was badly burned himself over most of his face, and that's why he grew this beard that he's now famous for. But he wasn't able to save her, and she died the next day. On December 8th, 1863, Henry, who had spent years in institutions because of his depression — he was in and out of hospitals all the time because he was a very depressed person — but on December 8th of 1863, he was allowed to bring his wounded son home to recuperate in his house. The Christmas season was upon them, and Christmas bells were ringing outside, and Longfellow fell into another deep depression. He continued to write, "And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men." But on Christmas Day, as the Civil War continued to rage, hope began to rise in Longfellow's heart. And even as the darkest chapter in American history was playing out outside his doors, something changed that Christmas morning with Longfellow. Next slide, please, Zach. At the age of 12, he worked 12-hour days in a shop. I was admiring Tom and Hunter's boots before we came in. And at the age of 12, he would spend 12-hour days in boot shops, and he would take the naturally brown cowhide, and he would tan it black, and this is what he spent his days doing. His dad was in a debtor's prison because he couldn't pay his debts. It was 1842, and he was heading down the same road as his dad, penniless. Jump ahead a couple decades, he's now a grown man with a family to provide for. He decided he'd try to write a book. He didn't know what to write about. In the summer of 1843, he read a report reminding him of his own childhood. The report contained interviews with boys who worked, eight-year-old boys who pushed coal carts for 11 hours a day. And it talked about girls who worked in sewing shops for 16 hours a day for next to no pay. He decided he was going to write that book. It was never intended to be a Christmas classic. The intention of the book was to draw attention to the plight of the poor in England. The book introduced new words to the English language like Scrooge and Bah Humbug. Merry Christmas came back to the world. America, believe it or not, had banned the phrase Merry Christmas at this time. It was the church that banned it. In the first week after publishing, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol sold out all 6,000 copies. They printed 8,000 more the next week, and they sold out also. And so today, the ghosts of Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future are a staple around the world because one man was concerned about the plight of the less fortunate. Slide number three, please, Zach. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Over 100 music industry superstars have recorded the song. It's called the Christmas Song. This is Nat King Cole. Cole was the first to sing it on the radio, and it became his signature song. And you could picture Nat, and he's looking outside as he writes the words, and the fire's in the hearth behind him, is sipping on hot tea and looking at the leafless branches of the trees outside. But the song was written by Mel Torme and his music partner Bob Wells. It was July in 1946 when the words were written, and it was over 100 degrees outside. The words were actually a wish. They were looking outside and they were writing down things that reminded them of being cold. And so as they looked outside and they're writing down these words, they kind of looked at each other, and 40 minutes later, one of the best-known Christmas songs was completed. And it's a Christmas staple to this day. Next slide, please, Zach. Everybody knows who this is, right? A Charlie Brown Christmas first aired on December 9th, 1965. More than 35 million people watched that first showing. It was never supposed to happen. Charles Schulz, the creator, was a devout Christian, but he was also very shy. The character Charlie Brown is actually stories of Charles Schulz's growing up, where he had no friends and he had nobody to talk to and nobody liked him. And so Charlie Brown is actually based on his life. He never wanted Charlie Brown and Snoopy and the gang to be cartoons. All he wanted them to be was comic strips. But one day the Ford Motor Company approached Charles and asked if they could use Charlie Brown in one of their ads. And because Schulz was a Ford man, he said sure and gave him the okay. 6 years after that, Charlie Brown was on the cover of Time magazine. And shortly after that, Coca-Cola approached Charles Schulz with the idea of sponsoring a special featuring Charlie Brown and his characters. Schulz worked with his friend and animation partner, Bill Melendez, to bring a Charlie Brown Christmas to life. In just 6 months, they created over 30,000 of the slides that became the animated cartoon. They had conflicting views on the characters, but as Schulz was the creator and he owned all the rights, he always got his way. For instance, Coca-Cola and Schulz's partner Melendez wanted Snoopy to talk and to be the star of the cartoon. And Schulz nixed that idea because the cartoon was based on his life. The strange voice of Snoopy in the Peanuts specials is actually the voice of Melendez barking into a microphone and then being sped up or slowed down to give the different emotions to the dog's voice. Schultz insisted on two other things. They had to hire child actors to do the voices, and the recitation of the Gospel of Luke by Linus could never be removed from the special. When discussions began on those things and they're going back and forth, Schultz stormed out of the room. The other people got the message. And today millions of people know about the birth of Christ because one man made a stand for Christ. One thing, amusing thing that came from the Charlie Brown special, those of us of a certain age will remember, when you watch this special, kids today, if you guys watch it, you'll see things you're not going to recognize, the aluminum Christmas trees. Remember that genius idea? So within 5 years of the Charlie Brown Christmas special airing, they were a thing of the past. Nobody sold them anymore. We know Christmas didn't happen on December 25th. What you may not know is how we got to that date, the story of how we got to that date, and a lot of people think they know it. A lot of pastors will teach that, how we know it. The story goes that there was a pagan festival. Pagan is non-Christian, okay, out in the world. There's a pagan festival. And so Christians, wanting to get those pagans into the church, chose December 25th to coincide with their festival to get people to come into the churches and hear about Jesus. It's not the way it happened. Roman Emperor Caesar Augustus, who we talked about a little bit last week, decided to hold a festival on December 25th. The festival was called the Day of the Unconquered Sun, S-U-N. That festival took place 25 years after Christians started celebrating Christ's birth on December 25th. So the true story is that the pagans picked December 25th to try to draw the Christians out, not that we chose December 25th to try to draw the pagans in. The world won't tell you that, of course. So these are just some fun and I hope interesting stories about some of our Christmas traditions and stories and songs, but they have nothing to do with the actual coming of Jesus. So here's the rest of that story. Slide, please, Eck. See, God looked down from heaven, and he saw misery and despair and sadness and loneliness. He saw people who had given up, people who had given up on themselves, people who had given up on others, people who had given up on life. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow was one of those people. He despaired of his own life that Christmas morning. But the bells continued to ring, and Longfellow continued to write. Then rang the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor does he sleep. Peace on earth. Peace on earth. See, Christmas is more than God saying, I love you. It's more than that. It's God saying with Longfellow, listen, the wrong will fail and right will prevail. With peace on earth, goodwill to men. Christmas morning is God saying, I have not given up on you. Christmas morning is God saying, you are precious to me. Christmas morning is God saying, you are not a mistake. I was looking through my DVR shows. It's Friday night. And I'm looking through my shows, and by chance, I happen to pick an episode of Air Disasters. Anybody ever watch Air Disasters? Funny topic for Christmas morning, I know. You seen it? Good show. If you haven't seen it, it's a good show. They take plane crashes, which is not good, but they show how they find out what happened during those plane crashes so that they can prevent them from happening again. And so the way they do it, it's a fascinating process. The NTSA, the National Transportation Safety Administration, they gather all the parts they can find from the plane down to the smallest bolt, and they get an empty hangar, and in that hangar, they assemble that plane back together piece by piece. And then they go through each piece individually until they find out what went wrong about that plane down. So the episode I'm watching is about Indonesian Flight 152, which crashed into the side of a mountain in 1997 and killed all 234 people on board. That night, just before I woke up, I had a dream. I was in that reconstructed plane with another NTSA official. We're in the very back of the plane, and we just looked at each other, and I looked over at him, and I said, they never had a chance. And I woke up precisely at that moment. It was Saturday morning at 5:36. I spent a couple of hours pondering the crash and the dream and asking God for insight into what it meant. The answer came slowly, but I knew it would come. And here's the thing about Christmas. See, when the plane hit that mountain, death showed no favoritism to the very young or the very old. It showed no favoritism to the rich or to the poor. Death didn't care if you were a nice person or a mean person. What does any of this have to do with Christmas, God? I mean, it's actually a pretty grim story. And here's the thing. There are only two moments in all of human history that are the same for every human being. Only two. Listen. One is the moment of death. We're all equal. And one is Christmas morning. We're all equal. We aren't all equal at the cross or the empty grave. And that sounds strange probably for a pastor to say, but see, at the cross and the empty grave, at that moment, that's where we choose God. It is El Nu'im, us with God. But Christmas morning, that baby lying in the manger, that's when God chose us. Emmanuel, God with us, each of us, without judgment, without condemnation, without any consideration to who we are in life or what we do in life. At that moment, on Christmas morning, we were all equal. Christmas morning is where God said, it doesn't matter if you're young or old. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter if you're nice or mean. It doesn't matter if you're American or Iranian. Christmas morning was when God said, I choose you. And that's what Christmas morning is about. Last slide, please, Zach. Luke 2:14. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace and goodwill toward men. Christmas morning is when everybody is equal in the eyes of God. Merry Christmas.